Want to be confident when talking about yourself and explaining what you do? Join my free 21-day confidence building course. You'll learn how to construct a personal elevator pitch, learn how to not be awkward in social situations, how to have awesome conversations, among other important skills to help you crush life. Best of all, it's free. Sign up now at freeconfidencecourse.com. From The C Method, my name is Christina Canters, and this is Stand Out, Get Noticed, the podcast that helps you communicate with confidence and clarity so you can get what you want in business and in life. To subscribe to the show and download the back catalogue, go to thecmethod.com/podcast. Oh, hey, hi there, and welcome to episode 27 of Stand Out, Get Noticed. My name is Christina Canters, and I am your host. Thank you for joining me for this very special episode. Now, tell me something. Do you wish that you had more time? As in, an extra day to get things done? Sounds impossible, right? Well, my guest this week is a time-generating magician. I'm serious. I'm very excited to introduce you to Ethan Glesic, founder of Enara, a consultancy that helps companies and individuals reclaim their time. He and his partner, Patricia, teach people about the strengths and weaknesses of the human brain and help them develop processes and strategies that enable them to handle more work in less time. In this conversation, we talk about attention and focus and why Ethan believes attention is one of the most valuable resources we have as humans and how you can be better at focusing your own attention so you can be more effective with how you spend your time. I read a book recently, it's called Life in Half a Second, and it's based on the idea that we have very, very little time left, and in the whole scope of the universe, our lives really only account for something like half a second. And there's a countdown on our lives. For example, let's say I can only be functional and effective until I'm 80 years old. That means I've got 51 years left, which works out to like 18,000 days. And when you think about how little time you actually have left, it makes you want to spend that time more efficiently. And what Ethan shares in this conversation will definitely help you to be able to do that. I met Ethan when he came and spoke at a workshop at RMIT University, and that's where I learned some really fascinating things from him. So I'm super excited to be sharing our conversation with you. You can find show notes at thecmethod.com/Ethan. Enjoy. Is it Enara or Enara?
Enara.
Yeah. Enara. Yeah. Where did the name Enara come from?
That's a really good question, and it's difficult to answer. We've been trying to answer that for a while. The closest we've got is Ara being A-R-A-H, is an ancient Asian word, which means the way or the path. And we think it's flowed down into Australia through the Aboriginal trace being Enara. But we're trying to substantiate that, and it's quite difficult because Aboriginal languages aren't written down. And there's about 300 different types, so it's very difficult. But the closest written origin we have is for Ara, and I think it's Old Malaysian or something like that.
Right. Interesting. Well, it's definitely memorable.
Excellent.
So that helps.
Excellent.
Now, Ethan, we met at a workshop that you gave at RMIT for people in the RMIT business plan competition, which was awesome. All about you taught us a lot of your time management stuff, which we'll talk about later. But in the business plan comp, you won 3 awards in, it was 2013, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. What impact did that have on your business at the time?
That was really exciting, actually. Because, and I think there was a bit of luck involved also with the way that we won the awards in that, or the way they presented the awards. So RMIT Business Plan has a community around it, which is all sorts of mentors and sponsors and people, judges and people who are associated with the competition. And on the awards night, our awards came up in succession, and I think there was about 5 or 6 awards that were given, and because ours came up in succession, it was a really big, powerful communication piece to all the people at the event that we've got something of interest. So it served almost as a marketing platform for us that we were endorsed by these leaders associated with the business plan competition. And we had something worth exploring or talking to a lot of audience members about in more detail.
So what happened after that then?
After that, I pretty much called and emailed everybody that was associated with the competition.
Okay.
And I drank a lot of coffee, wore out a few pair of shoes, and met all of the amazing people associated with the competition.
Right.
So, judge all through industry, there's judges that give their time, mentors in so many different areas of business, and basically got their advice on different ways we could move our business and different ways on growing our business, until some of them started saying things like, "Well, that's really interesting. Maybe you could come and talk to me about ways I could help my team improve productivity."
So you basically use the exposure that you got from the competition and just the connection that you had with those people as leverage to get a coffee with them.
Yeah, I guess that's what the coffee wasn't. It wasn't a sales coffee. It was a coffee for learning and getting their advice, because these people are associated with the competition because they want to give back. They don't get paid for it. There's no vested interest for them. All they want to do is help young entrepreneurs coming through. And so I thought, wow, this is a great opportunity for all of these people to who now have seen us endorsed in front of the community. So let's meet with them and find out what they think are ways that we can shape and grow our business. And then there was also the ulterior motive that hopefully they'll see some value and they might be able to recommend us to somebody, or it might be relevant for them. But that certainly wasn't the motive that set up the coffee.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes sense. I'm asking you these questions because I'm in round two and I believe the results are coming out this week,
Oh,
at the end
exciting.
of this week. So I'll
Yeah.
find out whether I'm in round three or not. And if I'm in round
Good
three,
luck.
then thanks. Then yeah, I'll have to go pitch, which will be really fun. But it's already been great. Like I've made awesome connections and the opportunity so far has been really, really great.
Yeah, for me it was a big turning point, actually, in that we also had I think we might have mentioned when I saw you at RMIT, we had a number of challenges about determining which strategies we should follow, and we had a variety of different options to us. And through the business plan competition, we got a fantastic mentor, the ex-vice president of marketing at Ford, and he runs a small consulting business now. I think he's a CEO of an association in the motor vehicle industry. And together, we could present different strategies to him, and it was for the business plan, but it was also for our business. So we got to form this relationship with somebody with been there, done that, experienced, and could bounce ideas off them to help us make decisions about which way we should really go and where we should invest our time, which is really the missing piece for us, because executing the time that we had was what we were really strong at, but deciding where to put that, where we should invest the time, that was the missing piece in the puzzle for us, which is why it was such I think, a transformation.
Is that what you help businesses do now?
Yeah, well,
Like where to spend their time?
that's really the next step. But the first step is just helping them get time back.
Right.
Because
Explain.
everybody's time poor these days. So, if you ask anybody, "How are you?" "I'm busy. I'm so busy, and I've got no time." So we have a magic wand that we wave, and then all of a sudden they get a day back, or they get 2 days back during the week. So that's the first step. And then once you've got this time, the question is, okay, well, what am I going to do with it? And that's
Okay.
really the second step.
Just taking another step back, how would you define productivity?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Everybody's got a different definition, right? But so if I wave this wand and you were 20% more productive tomorrow, what would you have?
Oh, I would say I would have more things ticked off my to-do list.
Yeah. Well, in essence, when we're running workshops and things, we go through four major areas. So the first one is time. But if you become 20% more productive, the first thing you're getting back is time. So all of a sudden you've got more time. The second thing, which is really big in the productivity space at the moment, is this really elusive thing called energy. And we kind of forget that we're all batteries. You've seen the Matrix, how they reduce the human down to a battery. Well, and really, we've got this certain amount of available energy to us each day. that we're not necessarily conscious of, but, you know, by mid-afternoon, you start to slump and get a little bit tired, and first thing in the morning, you might be fully energized, and you can only concentrate for a certain amount of time or hours during the day. So the second thing in productivity that we explore is energy and energy management and energy optimization. Third thing is control. And we look at what is control, what is really controlling all your activities every day and how to optimize it. And the fourth thing is outcomes. So all of this, the time and the energy and the control all going somewhere. And that's really, you know, to achieving the outcomes, it's important for the person or the business. And so bringing that all together, we define productivity as TECO, being the time, energy, control, and outcomes. That's the way we define productivity. And that's what we work with companies in those four domains. So it's all about TECO.
What do you find is the main thing that holds people back from being more productive? What's the biggest block?
There's a few, but it generally comes down to, well, there's a couple of major areas. If I had to choose one, I'd probably say attention.
Attention.
Yeah, so attention is a function that the brain has, which is basically your ability to concentrate and focus. And it's arguably one of the most valuable resources that we have as humans, you know, our ability to concentrate and focus. And our attention, although it allows us to do some amazing things, it also sabotages what we're trying to achieve constantly, all day, every day. So things like the way, I mean, even if you think about the way what your average day is like, where, you know, your ability to concentrate and focus is actually really, really fragile. You know, if you're having dinner with somebody and the waiter drops a glass, what's the first thing you do?
Yeah, your attention goes to that
straight to the glass. Any ping on your telephone, or your attention always goes to these really subtle things that's flickering around, like almost like a bird, you know, where it's any sort of sound, its head flicks to it. And we're not really that different. And you think about how fragile attention is, but it's also our unique capability to achieve any great work. So you think about a doctor or a surgeon, and he's going to operate on your heart. Where does his attention go?
Straight on to what he's doing.
Hopefully,
right? Heart, you'd hope so.
Hopefully. It depends on your surgeon, I guess. Or if you think about any great sports player, you know, Nadal in the middle of a serve, where's his attention? Or any athlete, where does their attention go?
They're just super focused on the task
They're
at hand.
They're full focused on the task at hand. Mm. And any sort of interruption or fracture of attention, they minimize. There's no tweets coming in through the operating theater with the doctor. There's no emails. There's no door that's always open and any colleagues can walk in. They're fully focused on the task at hand. And attention is so fragile that any sort of fracture to that decreases our ability to achieve our objectives, decreases our productivity. So I'd say one of the biggest areas that we see is constantly people don't value and consequently protect their own attention. They don't appreciate how fragile it is and how valuable it is. And as a consequence, have a whole series of habits and processes that really rob them of time every day.
Would the classic example be having email pings coming in, phone
yeah,
calls,
exactly.
all that?
Exactly. That is, I mean, if you look at email is one of the other major areas that I was alluding to before, because, you know, 30 to 40% of the average office worker's days spent in email. So you can focus on making some small optimizations in email and all of a sudden reclaim a significant amount of time. And one of those areas is certainly that little ping, which if you're receiving hundreds of emails every day, that's hundreds of times it's fracturing your attention. And the funny thing about it is, you know, you can be concentrating on something really important that requires deep concentration, and the person who's pinging you can be asking almost about irrelevant things that have no importance in your life or in your priorities, but it still fractures your attention. It's like, you know, imagine you email Nadal right in the middle of a serve and his phone starts buzzing in his pocket, you know, that would completely fracture his attention and his serve. So those sorts of things are happening to us all day, every day, and email is certainly one of the major places that we see that.
So every day I try to not look at my email until after lunch, Like, mm-hmm. I try and just focus all my morning creative energy on that. And I've told other people about this, and I've said, because I have people who work, say, in corporate jobs, and they'll say, I just spend all my day on email and I just can't seem to really focus on one task. And I say, well, why don't you just turn off your notifications until, you know, 11 a.m. or something? But then they say, yeah, but my boss and my supervisor sort of wants it right now.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're expecting. And I say, well, what happens if you don't answer? They say, well, my boss will walk over to me and interrupt me and say, hey, did you get my email? Or they'll call. So what can someone do in that situation?
Yeah, it's difficult for the individual. I think Tim Ferriss, you know, the author of the 4-Hour Workweek, had some creative suggestions on what to do, you know, with auto notifications and what it is. What was he saying? Something about act first, ask for forgiveness later, or sort of...
Yeah, ask for forgiveness instead of permission.
For permission, yeah, something like that. Yeah. But it can be difficult for individuals. And that's, in essence, so that's one of the core focuses in what we do is, instead of working with the individual, we take the team on a journey of valuing and protecting their attention.
Right.
And it's often the managers go on this journey with them because it's kind of this, you know, subtle thing that we're not consciously aware of. So we take the whole team on a journey. And then out of that morning, it's okay, well, now you really value and appreciate attention. What do you want to do about it? What changes do you want to make? And email is often one of the changes which come out of it. So then the team will decide as a collective, hey, let's have certain times where we've completely turned email off. Let's start the day without email and telephone calls and mobiles. Let's do a whole variety of things as a team to value and protect our attention.
That's a really great idea, because that way they're working together.
Yeah, exactly, because otherwise it's one person turning off their email and then a boss is getting annoyed and the colleagues are getting annoyed and they're still fracturing a common term that comes up in the workshops is desk bombing, you know. You're still getting desk bombed all the time and people are still – there's a lot of partition talking, which is distracting you. There's all sorts of other ways that your attention's being fractured apart from email. So when you take everyone on a journey, you get to explore what relevant areas – are affecting them as an individual and them as a team, and then focus on them rather than just one thing like email, which would be one of the challenges for your friend, for example.
Yeah. Back to the attention span thing. Mm-hmm. I've heard that after 90 minutes of being in the same physical state, like sitting at a computer, our brain stops processing information. Is that, and that's when we should take a break? Is this what you found with your research?
No. So basically with attention, Patricia and I, so Patricia's my business partner and also my wife, and she's the smart one, so she's a neuropsychologist with a PhD in neuroscience, and we've studied attention in a lot of detail, and so far we've identified 9 major limits, and one of them is attention span, but attention span is very elusive. So you can have, for example, attention span depends a lot also on motivation and your emotional connection to what you're doing at the moment you're doing it. Mm. So you can have a kid who's got ADD, right? Attention deficit disorder, as in they don't have enough attention. There's a deficit in attention. And yet they're glued to the TV screen playing a game for 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then I read an
same
a
for
document.
Adults.
Exactly. And then you say, you know, but attention only lasts 90 minutes, or the other common number is 20 minutes. So when there is significant motivational, emotional connection to what we're concentrating on, like a movie, if it's a really engaging movie, you can be glued to the screen for 2 hours. But if it's a boring movie, what happens?
Yeah, you start thinking about eating food.
You get about 20 minutes in, if you're lucky, and your mind starts bouncing to other things that you have an emotional connection to. That's not as or a lot more engaging than the movie in front of you. So there's a 90-minute number that's thrown around a lot. That number, which is thrown around, is to do with a different area called Oltridian cycles.
Ooh, okay.
And It's an 80 to a 120 minute cycle. It's a really interesting cycle. It was discovered back in the 1950s, I believe, by a Russian who fled to America during one of the wars. I can't remember which one it was off the top of my head. But he was actually it all started with him noticing his daughter, his newborn, and he noticed that her eyes were flickering when she was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought, well, something must be going on here. So he started studying what was happening to his daughter. He plugged her up to put these, like, it's called an ECG, I think, or an EGG, electro something gram. I have to ask Patricia what it's called. But essentially what it does is measure your brain waves. And he found out, you know, this was the origin of REM sleep. You know, when we go into that deep sleep every 90 or so minutes and we start to dream, well, REM actually occurs cyclic more than that, but there's a cycle of every 90 or so minutes when we're asleep. And that was when they first discovered this 90-minute cycle. And then many years later, as they kept studying attention and the brain waves and those sorts of things, they identified that, hey, this same cycle appears of high alertness and low alertness. It appears while we're awake.
Right.
Where you go from high level of concentration to low level of concentration. And that generally happens every 90 or so minutes. But that's not directly related to attention span.
Right. Okay. So they're two different things.
Yeah.
So I think it would just be easy just to say, just make sure you have regular breaks.
Yeah. Or the trick is that once you get in tune with these cycles, when you are staring at a computer screen and it's getting a bit blurry, or you find yourself really tired or wandering or squinting your eyes, that's a great time to have a break, because you're going to supercharge your circadian cycle and it's going to bounce back. But attention span, if you're really enjoying what you're doing, you don't need to worry about attention span. It takes care of itself.
Yeah. It's like when you're procrastinating and then all of a sudden you're super stressed because that thing is due like in 2 hours, and all of a sudden you've got a great attention span.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it all relates to the motivation. I heard an example recently where someone said it was talking about I'm probably going to get a few of them mixed up now. There's a couple of them mixing together where I think it was a father and his daughter said that she didn't want to do any homework, and he said, she was too tired to do her homework. And he said, well, what about if I give you $50? and she's like, ping, bang, of course.
Yeah.
And there was another one with a mother that couldn't change her eating habits. And he said, well, you know, hypothetically, she said, I just can't do it. I can't do it. There was a hypothetical situation that, you know, Mr. Mafia walked into the room and said he was going to shoot your kids unless you change your eating habits. Would you have any trouble changing? She was like, no, of course not. So it comes down to motivation of how that connects emotionally to the person.
I actually learned a bit about motivation and how there's two different types. There's the away from motivation. So your motivation is away from pain. In that example, it would be away from, you know, having your kids shot. Yeah. Or then there's the towards motivation, which is I'm going to achieve something really great, like get $50 if I do this. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's why people do things.
Yeah, the carrot or the stick, you know. Put a carrot in front of them and they run after the carrot, or hit them with a stick was the old motivational theory of motivating office workers. So my boss certainly used that back in the day.
What's the number one thing that's helped you personally with your own productivity?
Wow. Okay. So me personally, I don't know, there's been so many along the way. But if I have to talk about, attention's obviously a big piece. Getting really clear about what I want is a big piece, and then breaking that down into areas of, you know, tangible things that are meaning. But on a personal level, like for me personally, one of the areas that has probably had the biggest impact, certainly recently, which is probably why I'm remembering it or has a stronger connection to me now, is this piece around perfectionism.
Right.
So I'm a chronic perfectionist.
I don't know what that's like at all. Oh God.
And I've been to, you know, these conferences and they're talking about perfectionism and, you know, entrepreneur conferences and whatnot. And they're saying things like, you can't be a perfectionist because, you know, you spend all your time making everything perfect. You don't build your business. And it's like, yeah, I know that makes sense, but I'm a perfectionist and I try to not be, but I've just got to get this slide just perfect and I can't stop it. It's like this ingrained part of my being. And I know that in certain circumstances it's hurting me. But on other sides, I think, well, perfectionism is fantastic. You look at the iPhone, you look at the iPad, the level of perfectionism that's required to do those things. If you weren't a perfectionist, you couldn't achieve that level of quality. But in certain circumstances, it can be really unproductive because I can spend, you know, 8 hours on perfecting a presentation or a slide, but then have all of these problems because I've neglected some other activity which was also really important. So I've struggled with this for a while, and Patricia's always been on my case about, you know, the negative impact that it has. And then I came to this realization. I didn't even know where I was or how it happened, but I realized that I didn't need to stop being a perfectionist. I didn't needed to stop trying to fight being perfectionist, because that was just an uphill battle where I was losing constantly. I needed to become a perfectionist in the way I used my time.
Ah, okay.
So all of these people that had built businesses faster than I had, that had done things that weren't perfectionists, they were actually more of a perfectionist than I was in the way that they used their time. And so I went, wow, okay, being a perfectionist is a great strength. It's also a great weakness. But I can't change it. That's who I am. But what I can do is expand my definition now, expand what I'm including inside of being a perfectionist and to include the way I'm using my time. And so all of a sudden, when I get stuck in that presentation and I'm watching the hours go past, there's this little alarm bell which goes off going, bang, if you keep spending time here, you're not going to be a perfectionist in the way you spend your time. You're not going to achieve the objectives that you're aiming for. Snap out of it. Move into the high value activity that's really going to achieve you the results over the next couple of months.
Wow, that is a powerful reframe.
Excellent. Hope it helps. Help me on a personal level. Like, I mean, I think when we work with clients, we work around attention and we work around dynamic planning. We work around a few frameworks, and they've been really useful to me along the way. But more recently, over the last year, it's really been this concept of perfectionism, which for me personally has, you could call it a simple reframe, but I think it's actually just getting to the deeper truth in that if I am a perfectionist, then I'm not, and I identify as being a perfectionist, and I use my time in a way that's not helping me achieve my objectives, and I'm certainly not being a perfectionist in the way I'm using time. And that strikes to my core as how I identify myself. And so now I've got this mental trigger that constantly pulls me out.
Mm.
So I think, you know, it is somewhat of a reframe, but I think more than that, it's actually a deeper truth about perfectionism and how it relates to time and achieving outcomes in that time frame.
Yeah. Well, I'd certainly never thought about perfectionism in that way before.
Yeah.
I'd done what you were saying you were trying to do, which is to just get out of the perfectionism loop.
Yeah, the trap, they call it, perfectionist trap. And yeah, it doesn't work. I've tried it for years and failed for years.
Well, I'm really glad you came to that realization.
Yeah, me too.
That's
me
awesome.
Too. And more than me, Patricia's glad as well.
Less stressful for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, but before I let you go, I just want to let you know, Ethan, that I've been using the weekly outcome and daily to-do list technique that you taught us in your workshop, and it's been really, really effective.
Fantastic.
And so I really appreciate you sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, it just really helps to keep me focused.
Yeah.
And I know, like, a lot of people sort of get to the end of their week and just go, oh, what have I even done this week? But having those, you know, three outcomes and then working towards those, it's just been super helpful.
Excellent. That's what it's all about. Bit of clarity and creating alignment. And I'm glad it helps.
Yeah.
Hopefully it helps you win the business plan competition.
Hopefully. Well, I'm visualizing the win. I'm there. But next step will be to give the pitch. So that'll be my next challenge if I get to round three. Well,
yeah.
When
yeah,
I get I'm to round three.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. So, and the pitch will be good fun.
Oh yeah. I'm looking forward to that. It'll be good. And even just, I don't know, hopefully I can get to watch other people's pictures. Do they let you do that?
No.
Oh.
No, sorry. Yeah.
Shame.
Yeah, exactly. You can probably jump on the internet and find other pictures, but yeah, no, it's not an open forum. It's just the judges and the entrepreneur. So.
Like Dragon's Den.
Exactly. It is a bit like that. You walk into a room and there's all these big, powerful people sitting around. I think last time there was the ex-MD of Accenture sitting at the table. It's like, you know, not to put any pressure on you, but there's, you know, there are some heavyweight players at the table, and you walk into this big U-shaped room. It's all focused on you, and then you've got to take a deep breath and roll with it.
Wow.
Yeah. They could make a TV show out of it as well, I'm sure.
I think that would be a situation where you could definitely let your perfectionism take over and just go, I'm going to spend 8 hours on this slide because this is really important.
Yeah, exactly. There's a great book I read when I was preparing for my presentation about Steve Jobs presenting. And the amount of, I can't remember the name of it, but if it wasn't written by Steve Jobs, it was written about Steve Jobs. But a lot of the anecdotes were from him and whatnot. But he also spent an enormous amount of time in preparing for a presentation. And, you know, certainly now over the last couple of years, I've been presenting a lot and spend an enormous amount of time preparing for a presentation that it's ridiculous. I can spend, you know, 100 hours for an hour presentation in that. Once it's out there, and now I understand from the brain's perspective what happens through that process, but once you're out there, you're able to deliver things at such a high level. When you've practiced to that level and you've got the material down to that level that, you know, it's you can deliver.
Well, deliver, I mean, amazing you're things. A professional, just like a professional athlete who trains for months and months and months and years for one race that
That's
might,
right.
that might last, you know, a minute or yep. whatever. So it's exactly the same thing.
Exactly. And I have this belief that whenever you have a group's attention, you have this responsibility to deliver something to them, because it's not just every minute that you're spending. It's a minute multiplied by every person who's receiving value from that moment. So you have a responsibility to really use that time to deliver something of value to all of those people, because every minute is multiplied by the number of people that are in the audience. And so I look at that perspective as the amount of time that I'm investing is relevant to the amount of people in the audience rather than the amount of time I'm actually up on stage.
Well, you've definitely added a lot of value to this, and this podcast episode will be listened to by thousands of people.
Excellent. Excellent. That's good to hear.
Thanks so much. Where can people find you online if they want to get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. The website's probably the best place, which is just www.enara.biz.
Excellent. All right, I'll pop links in the show notes of the episode anyway.
Perfect.
All right, well, thanks again, Ethan. It's been awesome having you on the show.
You're welcome. Looking forward to seeing it online.
Massive thank you to Ethan Glesick for sharing his valuable time with us. Now, if you're wondering what the time management tool is that I mentioned at the end, it goes like this. At the start of your month, write down your key monthly outcomes you want to achieve. Not tasks, outcomes. So things that require a whole bunch of different tasks to complete. So for me, an outcome would be submit my business plan for the competition, right? Very big goal. Then at the start of the week, I write down 2 to 3 weekly outcomes based on that monthly outcome. So for example, it could be have the finance section of the business plan done for that week. And then every evening that week, I would write down 3 key tasks that I needed to do the next day based on those weekly outcomes. For example, fill out profit and loss statements, email draft to my mentor, calculate my break even. Does that make sense? So my daily to-do list is directly related to my weekly outcomes, which are then directly related to my monthly outcomes. And you can even go further with this and write down quarterly outcomes and yearly outcomes, which I haven't actually done yet, but I'm planning on doing them. It's on my task list today. But doing it this way means that 6 months down the track, I'm actually heading in a direction that I want to be heading. So I'm focused and I'm not busying myself with unrelated tasks every day that then make me go, what the hell have I been doing all year, you know, when it gets to a few months down the track. I'll put a snapshot of my to-do list. I physically write it down. I'll take a snapshot of my notebook and I'll put some examples in the show notes if you want more details about how I do it, along with links to where you can find Ethan and the things that we talked about. You can find it at thecmethod.com/Ethan. That's thecmethod.com/Ethan, E-T-H-A-N. Awesome. Well, I hope you found the last 30 minutes or so a valuable use of your time. I know how precious time is, and I am so grateful that you've chosen to spend a decent chunk of it with me. You are a rock star. Oh, and also make sure you tune in next week to hear if I made round 3 of the business plan competition. Oh, fingers crossed. Results are out this week, which is pretty exciting. Keep on being awesome, just as you are, and I will see you next week. My name's Christina Canters, and this has been Stand Out, Get Noticed.